I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Do you take an earlier apex to carry more speed? And then you can outbreak the bloke on the left going into the next corner, which Damon didn't quite do famously against Michael Schumacher in 95.
There's something about it that always produces something unusual.
Anything for me that was off the public road was just a sort of canvas on which you can paint fun. Hello, and welcome to the Collecting Addicts podcast, episode number 60. Chris Cooper, the nicest man amongst us, tells us that's a diamond anniversary. So well done to us.
Amazing.
First topic this week, what's your favourite race circuit and why? Okay. I'm going to go straight to Edward Lovett.
Hopefully I don't kill it for everyone else.
There's so much to talk about.
Yeah. I think it's got to be Silverstone.
Yeah.
That's my choice for a few reasons. Number one, as a boy, I used to go with my father and watch the Grand Prix there every year.
Nice.
So that was always a treat, going to a real Grand Prix. But in my later years, not going there and watching it, I think it's one of the best races on the TV. There's normally always a race there, which if you're watching Formula One, you do want there to be a real race going on. My only caveat would be I want Bridge back. Bridge was a brilliant corner. A brilliant corner to watch and a brilliant corner to drive.
Yeah.
That's cool.
When they'd explode from the darkness of the tunnel and then suddenly take the next right. It was so fast, wasn't it, visually?
It was, yeah. Did they get rid of it to extend this? Did they want to make the lap longer? Or
yeah, well, yeah. It was when they built the new wing section.
Yeah.
On the Sir Lewis Hamilton straight, as you get down that towards the new Abbey, that which is a glorious corner itself. I have to say, we haven't lost everything because that new Abbey, in lots of anything from a Caterham to a GT3 FIA car with lots of aero, bloody good corner. But just as you start to think about the right, the old circuit went to the left, so we'll never use again because there's buildings and grandstands there. So it's still there, you can walk on it. People go to the Grand Prix of Racing will see it, but it's kind of marooned now. The track's still there, the bridge over it is still there, the curbing's still there, and you walk it and you think, that was a mega, mega corner. Because it's quite technical because of what followed. And do you do that sort of a diving? Do you take an earlier apex to carry more speed? And then you can outbreak the bloke on the left going into the next corner, which Damon didn't quite do famously against Michael Schumacher in 95.
That was
just lovely.
I saw that.
Yeah, Silverstone's a great choice.
Also, do you think
there is some great footage, actually, some historical F1 footage going through there. And that Damon piece was one of them.
Yeah.
Do you think that Bridge was helpfully cambered, because you could always carry more speed through it than you thought, couldn't you?
Yeah.
If the following left was Priory, is that right?
Priory, then Brooklands, then Luffield.
So from my memory, you could bridge. You were always a bit, Jesus Christ, I could have gone even faster. I thought I'd really pinned that. And then Priory was crowned a bit differently, so it would understeer a bit. So you sort of, it was helpful. The circuit designers had helped you. In the really, really, really quick, ballsy one, you have more grip. And then the one afterwards, it just crowned a bit.
It was one of those, I think that's right. And it was one of those classic corners where, because there's a bridge parapet, as you come out of the old club chicane, that chicane between club, depending on which circuit you were using, as you went over the brow, approaching bridge, because there's the parapet there, you can't see the exit. And your mind tells you any corner, Copse is a bit like that, because it's such a tight apex. You can't see the exit. Your brain says to you, oh, I'm not sure, even though you've been around it a million times. So you'd always, you quite often get through bridge thinking, well, I could have carried a bit more speed there. A little bit of camber. It's just lovely. So yeah, I think Silverstone's a brilliant choice.
A few people have told themselves they can carry a bit more speed through Copse and have regretted that decision.
Yeah, not me.
So Edward Lovett says Silverstone. None of us disagree. Manish, what's your favourite circuit?
I mean, this is based really on television, obviously, more than anything else. I mean, I love, very, very difficult to argue with Silverstone, by the way. And I think there's a good Frank Williams quote, you know, about it. It's a little bit dated and sexist now, but he says it's a real man's circuit. That's what he used to call it. And
makes total sense why I chose it then.
But I think, you know, the modern translation of that would be it's a real driver's circuit. And I like any circuit that's a real driver circuit, because what you're really saying, as Chris so beautifully put it just now, that there are lots of interpretations, lots of ways of taking corners. It's not just one line, one set of marbles. And it means drivers can make a difference. And for me, the other circuit that's like that is actually Suzuka. I think, you know, I was addicted to Jeff Crammond's Grand Prix 4. I remember buying a Momo steering wheel, proper pedals, and learning as many of those circuits as I could. And I used to spend ages in, I think, a pre-addict's way, setting up cars. And so, you know, you try all kinds of things at places like Monaco. Very, very interesting. Silverstone, absolutely fantastic. But there was something about Suzuka. There's something about it that always produces something unusual. Always, you know, the drivers come to the fore. And I have to say, when I used to drive it, with good old Jeff Crammond, it was the Degner corners that I found absolutely fantastic. You could do the first one almost flat, second one you'd get exactly right. You'd always get on the curve. You could spin the car, no problem. And got those two wrong, you got the hairpin completely wrong. And suddenly you'd lost half a second. And I was just saying, you know, segue into this weekend's Grand Prix, and we were talking about it, the driver who's not too short on praise for himself, rather praised himself, saying P5 was completely out of position given the car. We are maybe the best car. You have Alonso, you know, planting that car in, was he sixth in qualifying and fifth in the race?
Yeah, sixth.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. I mean, just that's pretty spectacular in that car. I mean, you know, and I would say the great thing about Suzuka for me, just great childhood memories. First time I saw that circuit, Senna and the banana yellow Lotus. He wins his world championship there. He gave one to Berger there. He took Prost off there. Prost took him off there. So just in terms of kind of, you know, drama, Suzuka. And I got up for it, by the way. You know, I didn't get up for Australia, but there was no way I was not going to get up for the Japanese Grand Prix, even though it was round four. So Japan.
That's another good call. I remember getting up for the 94 Japanese Grand Prix.
Oh, when it was
that
raining.
Famous two-part Grand Prix in the wet.
Nuts.
And Damon was interviewed this weekend, and he still says, I just had an out-of-body experience that weekend. I just drove at a level I've never driven before. And that's when I still think that was just one of the most amazing races. And so, yeah, Suzuka, I think, is. And it does prove one thing. In one respect, Scalextrix is cool.
Yeah, it's
figure of eight circuits are cool.
Yeah.
By the way, did you see Schumacher shook his hand? And there was nothing contrived about that. After that race, Damon's in the cockpit. You see Schumacher come up to him. And he just shakes his hand.
Yeah.
Because it's like, mate.
That was quite cool.
That was your race. Wow.
Neil Clifford.
Oh, I wish I had your brains, you guys, because A, I don't like circuits. be it that I obviously like looking at them. I don't like being on them, I suppose, to context.
That's okay. That's just as important.
Yeah, to put a context to that. And B, I don't... I've watched Formula One for 20 or 30 years. You know, I really love Formula One because it's cars and it's people and it's handsome, fabulous, wonderful women and men and it's sexy. And I couldn't tell you anything about any of the circuits. They all look the same to me. I think, you know, my brain has done me quite well in life, but there's a bit missing when it comes to remembering circuits. Even though I've been to Silverstone maybe 10 or 20 times on track days, the minute I drive out of that pit, I have no idea if it's left or right.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you love Goodwood as a...
Well, look, if you wouldn't mind not answering my question... even though
I'm here to help. I am here all day.
My favourite circuit is Goodwood. And it's my favourite circuit, mainly because I love watching vintage racing there. And it's, you know, I adore the place. It's local to me as a kid. You know, I grew up in Portsmouth. I've got a photo of myself. Where the hell is it now? Hold on a second. A photo of me when it was derelict in 1977.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And my, you know, my brother rallied a Mark I Escort. And you could just drive in there. It was full of brambles, barbed wire. It's me sat on, you know, one of those sort of 70s cagoules and my flares and my sort of Clark's attackers with a compass in the sole. So for me, I have a huge passion for Goodwood. It's mainly for me about watching people, seeing lovely people, meeting lovely people. We're all there for members meeting this weekend. So even though I don't like being on circuits, I do love circuits.
I think the answer for driving and watching are probably very different for most people.
You know, it's
completely, yes. Completely, yes.
It's one of those massive stories, isn't it? It's a, you know, it's how does Britain have some derelict circuit with a stately home? 20 years later, it becomes something that absolutely everyone...
Oh, it's genius.
Cars.
And you only have to spend 5 minutes in the company of lovely Charlie March to realise what a bloody genius he is, how he's done that. You know, obviously, you know, he's got a few bob, but he's got a massive brain and a lot of energy and a lot of drive and, you know, he's got, you know... a lot of OCD and a lot of passion, and he's done such a masterful job. It's just bloody fantastic, that place.
Yeah.
We're so lucky to have it on our doorstep.
Yeah, hear, hear.
Chris Cooper, we'd like to answer the question for yourself, no?
No, I'd like Neil to answer it, actually, in the spirit of... Oh,
okay, Spa, when I was in a caterer...
Oh, he's done you
there. See, we know each other so well.
No, he's done you there. He's done you there.
So it's not, I was going to say, it's not the Nürburgring, because it's kind of all the Nordschleife. There are lots of answers to this question, which is why I kind of, you know, my instinct was, Neil, but you don't have to be a driver to love a circuit. You don't have to know which way they go.
Yeah.
And your love of Goodwood for those reasons is just as strong and important as Chris and Maya's love of the line you take at Bridge. It's different but the same. The Nordschleife is a love-hate relationship, particularly for me, before Monkey jumps in and starts showing pictures of various broken cars I've left littering most of Southwest Germany. I mean, it's the Everest of our sport.
Yeah.
Every other circuit is that little rolling hill somewhere in Somerset in comparison to Everest. You never, and you know, honestly, I probably had a few falls there because he thought, I'm going to see if I can climb higher, see how high I can get. And he goes wrong, because it's kind of place where it will go wrong. So although I love it, and we're going to talk a little bit later about long journeys in cars, and one of the things I loved about it was the camaraderie and the long journeys in a car from here to there and back again, hopefully on the way back, not without a broken car and total silence in the car while everyone was thinking, what do we say to Chris now he's broken another car? But in terms of, I do love Spa. I love Spa because as a driver, it's still somewhere, although I sort of loved it in its last incarnation, when the bus stop was literally a bus stop. Most people know the bus stop is called, what's called a bus stop, because pre-99-2000, a lot of it's still public road, and that was a bus stop. Buses stopped there. The new one I don't like so much. I sort of, it's just too fiddly. I know why they've had to do it, but it's too fiddly. But the one before, it was this quite unique combination of quite technical, but utter bravery, particularly at Eau Rouge, where not just Eau Rouge, but Pouhon, Blanchimont before the runoff and all those kind of things. So as somewhere to express yourself and to feel the car flow, it's quite hard to top Spa. Cadwell Park, that's amazing. First time I went to Cadwell Park, when I started my first year of Caterham racing, it's in the middle of nowhere. It's a beautiful part of Lincolnshire. Most people think Lincolnshire is quite flat, but the Lincolnshire Wolds are beautiful, really lovely, rolling, beautiful rural country. First time we got there, and there was a pathway. We parked in the paddock, which was grass in those days, walked past a couple of little sheds. There's a little pathway thinking, oh, this must be the pathway that leads to the circuit. And after a few moments, we realized, no, this is the circuit. It's really, really narrow, really twisty, trees and stuff everywhere. People described it as the mini Nürburgring, which is slightly optimistic. I mean, it's nothing. But to have it on our doorstep, if you've never, even just to go there and visit it, and watching the bikes go over the mountain, the first part of the mountain where they literally take off. I saw something this week of a GT3 Porsche taking off. So to go and watch motorsport and the vehicles that we love, bikes or cars, at Cadwell.
Nice. I've never been there.
Yeah, there's nothing like it in the UK. So we could talk all day, all week about favourite circuits. It's a bit like who's your favourite friend and what's your favourite car. It's just so many different answers. Mm. I like all the answers everyone's given. I think they're all, it's like walking into somebody who's breeding Labradors. I love all of them. I'll take all of them.
Wait, just cut out there. What did you say about Labradors?
He loves all of them, apparently.
I'll take them all.
Yeah. Home.
I think that's a good analogy, that.
There we go. Somehow we've gone from the Nordschleife to dog bothering in 4 minutes. Well done, Chris Cooper. I'll start. He started off with a negative statement. I'll do the same. It's not Spa. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm shit there. I think that's I've got a thing about circuits. I can't really say I love a circuit unless I'm all right at driving around it.
Why do you think you're shit there?
I've never had any luck. I've never been any good. Never been.
Oh, that's different.
I've never been very fast there. I don't really. I'm all right in an old car, but I'm not really very good there. But I agree with Chris Cooper. When Eau Rouge presented some sort of a risk, Blanchimont used to be horrific because you could, as you turned in, the bloody barrier was about a yard to your right, and you were like, oh my, there's a lot of wake up calls, and the Pouhon. I can remember first time I raced there, 2000? No, first time I raced there. God, that makes me feel old. I went off in free practice at Pouhon onto the gravel, and it wasn't gravel. I remember getting out of the car. It was like chunks this big. I thought, yeah, how on earth am I?
I've done that.
Bloody terrifying. So it's not Spa for me. Oh, first of all, need a massive shout out to America, because the first time I went. And any time in American race circuits, I had this awfully jaundiced European view that it was all about European circuits and we were better, and they just drove around in circles on ovals. And then I went to do a job at Watkins Glen.
Yeah.
And wow.
Yeah.
Like, if we bemoan old circuits, or as Manish quite rightly quoted Frank Williams, real man circuit, terrible phrase now, I know, they fit the criteria now, even now. There's not much runoff. the barriers are old and there are high consequences. So shout out to America for me, Watkins Glen.
Road America.
Road America, Road Atlanta. Road Atlanta, yeah. In a fast road car.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What a circuit. Sebring. Go to Sebring for the 6 hours during spring break weekend. We talk about a combination of challenging circuit and atmosphere. Not sure you can, you know, just loved it. However, the UK, Silverstone, absolutely love. But I'm not sure there's a UK circuit that I really don't enjoy driving around. I think that's maybe where I'd want to leave this, but I have to choose one. Any circuit is a place where you can express yourself in a way that you can't on the road.
Yeah.
If you and I've spent a lifetime trying to make places that aren't that exotic look exotic to the cameraman. So if you gave me one corner of asphalt in a farmer's garden that he'd put down for some reason to as hard standing, I would go there and do a skid in 30 yards with a photographer and make the car look super exciting for the front of Evo magazine.
Mm.
And that by definition meant that anything for me that was off the public road was just a canvas on which you can paint fun. So I love, if you just give me any circuit, that's why special shout out to Landau. Everyone that comes to Landau or sees Landau goes, oh, it's just an oval. No, it's not. It's a place for us. That circuit can expose the fault of any chassis of any car I've ever driven. And I love the fact that it's close to me and I love Landau. So, however, I have to disagree with Chris Cooper. The greatest of all for me is the Nürburgring because it's just got everything, really. And the reason I choose the Nürburgring is I spent several minutes yesterday evening trying to persuade myself that it wasn't the Nürburgring. And that in itself is futile.
Yeah, so that's what I did.
I had to persuade myself that it wasn't means I was talking utter bobbins, and it is. Yeah. So it's a remarkable piece of asphalt. And I know it changes and it gets easier. But the first time you go there, and you might have seen it on games or on videos, but the first time you go there, you'll drive out and you'll be a minute into it, and your brain will be thinking, wow, it's still going. And then your brain will think, did they really race Formula One cars here? No, that you just ask some series of questions that don't have obvious answers.
Yeah, so, amazing.
That's a good eulogy to the ring. There are Labrador puppies in other parts of the world, Bathurst in Australia. I take that one home.
Not a permanent circuit though, is it?
Bathurst. Bits of it. It's a bit like an old spa, yeah.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
I need to blow my nose. Mm. Here we go. Moving on to an even more thorny issue. Probably the wrong word. What's your favourite armrest, centre armrest in a car? One second. Some answer. Oh, I'll tell you what. Neil Clifford.
I've got a very good mate that really takes the piss rightly out of me that says, every bloody car you ever own or buy, it's always the fucking best one that's around. And you should work in PR. I should have worked in PR, actually. I suppose I have a little PR function in the company that I'm
in.
Yeah,
you sort of do at the moment. Yeah.
But I'm very good at self-promoting, which is, you know, can be a bit narcissistic, really. But anyway, I tried to do it with humour. I've just bought a Range Rover L322, right? I talked about this a couple of weeks ago for $9,000. I've had a couple of them in the past when they were sort of more expensive and the supercharged one and all that, when black cars were cool. I can't believe I had a black one of those. It's the worst color. Yeah. But anyway, I've got a navy blue one now. And I drove it yesterday. And the interior, I know we're not talking about interiors, we're talking about armrests, is wonderful because the quality of it is actually much better than the newer ones. Just the feeling. Totally. It feels like a disco four. It's sort of peak Tonka toy robustness. And then you sit in that seat, which is all, it's a lovely armchair. It's super comfortable. It's got all the adjustment, the leather's nice. But the armrest, you've got two armrests, really. You've obviously got the lovely little leather paddy square one that's got the lift up bit. But the key bit is that, and they have them on the disco threes and fours as well, don't they? That sticky out one that goes up and down.
Yeah.
And the key bit of this is the little knob at the end.
The knob.
The rotary knob because you can absolutely perfect it to like, you want it like 7 degrees. You don't want it quite horizontal. You want to just have it like 7 degrees. And the joy that that little knurly knob brings, that you adjust it, you go, oh, and the wife's been in it and it's a bit low or whatever, and you just adjust it up 7 degrees just, and you're like, I'm ready to go now. That is perfect.
It's so, well-being. That is the definition of well-being.
Yeah, it is. And then you go to the petrol station, as I did yesterday at 4:45, because I still got bloody jet lag, and you fill up that tank. And it's a big tank. It's like 120 quid on that thing. All petrol's gone up and I haven't noticed again. It's probably back to 2 quid or whatever. And I mean, you imagine if you could just adjust your prices on everything we sell. It'd be wonderful, wouldn't it? I mean, those petrol stations take the piss, don't they? Oh, I'm going to put shoes up 20% this week, you know. You could
go on, give that a try. Tell us what happens next week.
You could protect your profits, couldn't you? But anyway, that big tank full up, huge joy. Adjust your little knob to 6 degrees.
Oh, six now, is it?
Perfection, that armrest.
Yeah. It's a winner.
It appreciates
Have you checked your brake pads?
Oh. That's another story.
This should be called. This podcast should be renamed "In Appreciation of the L322."
Yeah,
it's really good. Yeah,
I would love it. What's your favourite armrest? Because all the cars of your youth had armrests and cigarette lighters in the back.
Yeah, exactly. Do they call it an armrest in the back? It sort of was. I liked the one that with the crystal in the back.
Well done. Well done. Good lad.
I couldn't really think of one. That's even worth talking about. I'm not sure if it was an L22, but does that one slide as well? But not the
middle bit.
Does that slide open?
There's one there's a BMW that slides forwards.
Yeah. I was trying to remember the car that you get into, and for some reason, every time you put your elbow on the center armrest, it wants to slide forward.
I think it was an E39 5 Series that did that.
Well, it could have been the state of your well-being or postprandial hydration.
No, well,
that might have caused a slight skidage.
You're saying he has sweaty elbows?
It was a Friday built car, I think. It was a Friday built car.
Okay, or it wasn't just a Friday.
So, we like the sweeties in the cars, as we've talked about. So, and because I've got 3 children and a wife and some dogs, you know, that the center armrest with sweeties in there, it's not one sweetie for me, it's sweeties for everyone now. Yeah. So it needs to be a rather palatial armrest. So probably something from an Escalade that you can open up and have a variety of sweeties in there that are air conditioned and chilled.
Edward is onto something there. Also, I love the description of his family because I've got 3 children and a dog and a wife.
And a wife.
So he's quite right. I think an American air-conditioned, icy, massive glove box that's big as Minnie's boots. When you first see one of those, you go, wow, this is the future. Let's go to Manish Pandey.
I've got this thing about the interiors of cars and things like armrests with all their accoutrement, whether they're sort of knobs in the back that adjust your individual air conditioning or a great big hole in between the two of you with a bottle of Dolly Cristal in or whatever. They just all look like Emirates business stroke first class interiors, especially when they're that light leather. I hate them. I just absolutely don't think a car should have any of that shit in at all. And in fact, for me, this was actually one of the few answers. I had an immediate answer. It was Uncle Francis's old Rolls-Royce Silver Shadow 2. And I loved in the front, he had the double armrest. So, you know, driver could have it down, or the passenger could have it down, the driver could have it up, the passenger could have it up. Just individually perfect. And in the back, basically a double bed between you,
the big one,
and the passenger. It was wide. You could both get your elbows on. You could there'd be two guys Neil's size, and they're not fighting over the armrest. They've just got, they can literally, 2 6-foot-4-inch guys with Popeye forearms, plenty of room each. functional, beautiful. Leather was immaculate. I remember he had dark blue leather inside.
And it's got that little leather bit, little leather belt at the end. You could just flip it down with your finger.
Little leather belt at the end. Pull it up. Just perfect. Functional. None of this Emirates. Here's a can of Coca-Cola. Here's a can of Dr. Peppers. Just get rid of it.
Podcast of the people.
Yeah, no, that's a good armrest.
Chris Cooper, what's your favourite Rolls-Royce armrest?
Well, I do have an armrest of the people answer. Mark 7 Golf.
Yeah.
Mark 7 Golf has got that. It's a slidey one, but
that's what Evan was thinking of.
It also has a tippy bit, which you can lift up. It's got a little clever ratchet in it.
Yeah.
You lift it up, and it's not quite as satisfying. Well, it's not as satisfying as the knurly, those sort of the little knurly knobs. And you just instinctively know you get into Range Rover. Which way do you knurl them to raise or lower them?
Left goes up. Left goes
left,
up.
Left up, yeah.
Exactly. But the Mark 7 Golf armrest, I think, is the armrest of the people because it slides around. You can do it uppy, downy, and it will just hold itself in midair. It's just brilliant. It's just for an everyday people's solution, I think Mark 7. I mean, the 322 is clearly, and there are other Range Rovers as well. But what, Neil, when you sent those pictures, you and I were both up quite early that morning, whenever it was, and we were having a little well-being sharing moment.
Yeah.
Of that, the architecture of that dash and those beautiful vertical pillars of wood, which sort of pierce the structure of the dash and then reappear, which just sends a sense of huge solidity and structure.
Yeah. And it is solid as well.
And confidence. And you've got those little captain, I think they're called captain's chairs armrests, because they're sort of like a captain's skipper's chair in a maritime vessel.
Yes.
But yeah, so I think armrest of the people, as a counterpoint to armrest of the hoi polloi, of the plutocrats, it would be Mark 7 Golf.
I have to agree. In fact, there's a Mark 7 Golf that lurks within my broader family unit. And I'll tell you what's critical about this armrest, the Mark 7, it's cloth, it's fibre in
exactly.
And it grips your elbow. If you get in a leather one and your elbow slips on it, it's like walking on ice. You don't want that. You need some adhesion onto the fabric, or Edward, it counts as the sweatiness of that elbow. Because if you've got very sweaty elbows, like we know Edward has, you're like an anti Prince Andrew, aren't you? Known to be sweating from the elbows. All of these, I sort of get the 3-2-2 one. My only problem with these single armrests that come out of a so-called captain's chair is that they are by definition quite thin, and a thin armrest sort of refocuses the pressure onto your arm. You're aware that you're really pushing onto something because it's narrow.
Yeah.
The wider the surface that you're leaning on, then it feels more like you're just, you know, you're putting your elbow onto a large ottoman. And that for me is the sense of luxury. And therefore you need to have a big, wide mostly American cars are amazing at it. Like you get into a Suburban,
yeah,
you can tell that someone spent about 13 minutes figuring out how it handles and about 17 months working out where if you touch anything, your body will just bounce off it gently.
Yeah.
Everything is, and they've just worked out, where do you put your cup there? What will it be like in a 50 mile an hour right-hander? Couldn't give a shit, but I can put my big gulp there and I know that it won't spill a drop while I'm doing it. For me, these are priorities that matter. In Europe, the car I've driven and has got and I'm experienced regularly has the best armrest is my 200 series Land Cruiser. It can move forwards and backwards. It's so big. I mean, in soft furnishing terms, it would be a poof sitting on top of a box. I mean, it's about that wide. It's wider than a seat in a Mini, I think.
Yeah.
And because it's so old, it's just broken down. It's gone a bit soft. And because the leather has just started to, if it was leather, it was more like lubber, that sort of leathery rubber mixture they put in cars.
What's it called?
Lubber, leather and rubber. Because we don't get leather really in cars. There's no cow, it's lubber.
I've now got an answer to a later question on our podcast.
Okay.
In my industry, it's called pleather.
Is it? Okay, right. So you got lubber, and it just, because when lubber just breaks down, it becomes grippy, doesn't it? You know, when you get in a car, it before it actually disintegrates and they separate. So now I've got this grippy surface in the car, and it's soft, and my elbow sits on it, and I just think it's just joyous, and it's wide, it spreads that pressure. I remember there was this almost segues into what Chris Cooper's talking about, a later question. There's a guy that, so I mentioned it before, a guy that has a garage near where I used to live called Chris Clinker. It's a place called Parber Cars.
And
I remember him pointing out to me that Mercedes-Benz's thought about your right elbow as well in a right-hand drive car. He used to hate BMWs. There was no padding for your right elbow, but Mercedes-Benz's surfaces were always padded on the right elbow. And I got in a car recently, I thought he was right.
He's right.
Germans.
He's right. But the BMWs don't, and Audis have a little bit of padding. It's a bit mean. But Mercedes-Benz's think about your right elbow as well as your left elbow.
It's true.
Yeah, BMWs are for driving. That's why they don't. And Audis are shit. That's why they don't.
Jesus Christ. But I do think a good centre armrest. It's amazing. If you watch someone get into a luxury car, the first thing they'll do is play with the armrests. They'll get in and go, and they'll move them up and down, they'll move them around. That before they even press buttons, the armrest is the priority.
Yes.
Long drives, something that all of us as addicts love. Do you prefer doing them solo or with an person or, I suppose, multiple persons? Are you sociable or are you a solitary creature? Chris Cooper.
Well, this is where I do love the Nürburgring. I just noticed in the notes that Finn and Cam shared with me, because we had this conversation, why isn't it the Nürburgring? And Finney said to me, isn't it a bit reductive for us to say the Nürburgring is our favourite circuit? I had to go and look up what that meant.
I'm going to now.
Yeah. I love long drives with passengers and by myself. First time I drove to the ring for a race meeting, 2001, I drove by myself, and it was just such a voyage of discovery and adventure. Eurotunnel, France, Belgium, Germany. It was just wonderful. And I also enjoyed, and I loved, and that was a big part of it, really big part of it, was, Chris, the drives that we had to the ring with Guy Spur for our racing there all those years. So I think both. One of the boys said to me, and, you know, we all know this. A long drive in a car, particularly if it's just two of you, you end up having a conversation you'd never have in any other circumstance in any other time.
That's true.
Yep.
And Finney reminded me of that last night. He said, a long drive with one other person in the car, you have the conversation you never have any other time. And I think that's just totally true. And I love that. There's just the rhythm of the conversation.
It's the therapist's chair, isn't it?
It is. There are two therapist's chairs in the front of the car. And I think the most, this sounds really sycophantic, but do you remember, Chris, the first time you and I sat in a car together? It was a Mitsubishi Evo 7.
Oh, yes, yes.
And we drove it from, when you and I pretty much first met.
And I blagged it from Mitsubishi for a four-day UK road test and drove it straight to the Nürburgring. Sorry to the cult car company. I might have been a bit mischievous there.
Yeah.
They're out of business, don't worry.
Yeah, sad that, isn't it? It's all gone. So we drove from Teddington, the Autocar offices, via Flexi Plus, which is when you discovered I was your real friend, because I would always upgrade Eurostar to Flexi Plus. I mean, who wouldn't? And we then drove all the way to, and we had we just talked about everything.
Well, I wouldn't have got to know you as quickly if we'd sat on an aeroplane together or if we'd sat on a train. So there's something about the car environment that it forces things to happen one way or the other. You know very quickly whether you're going to go down the silence Haribo fiddle with radio route or whether you're going to talk, don't you? Yeah. Very quickly. And if it's the former, and you think we've got 10 hours here, this is going to be a struggle.
Yeah, they always seem, I've mentioned this before, when you and I were went to the Paul Ricard for that training day.
Yeah.
Another manufacturer's press car that turned out not to spend the whole weekend in the UK either. That was it, RLG?
That was not Hebe.
XLG. We drove back. We spent the morning at the ring as Paul Ricard learning it. Bosh, done. Thought, let's just go home. So we just drove in one hit from Ricard, left midday, got back to Eurotunnel early evening. And we just talked the whole way. It's quite a noisy car to talk in. And we listened to stuff on the radio. We listened to stuff on Spotify. We listened to John Finnemore's Cabin Pressure, a whole bunch of other stuff. And it's just a journey of showing, hey, I've got this thing. You'd like this. Well, actually, you can't. It was just so long journeys. And they work with families. So when the boys and I go down to Cornwall, beginning of the summer, we'll take the Defender. And the three of us will go in the Defender. And we'll just chatter the whole way about stuff we want to do, people are going to see in Cornwall in the summer, just everything. It's just long drives are good.
That's true.
In support of long drives. Neil Clifford, what do you think?
I'm so torn on this because that was such a wonderful answer, Mr. Cooper. And you're dead right. You've swayed me a bit, actually, because I was absolutely 100% I'd rather be on my own. But you've just convinced me that actually some journeys you do long with people are really, really nice. So I think it's very, very thoughtful of you. I get anxiety about long drives. If I'm going, because there's a few different facets to this, isn't it? Long drive completely on your own, long drive with other people in different cars, and long drives with people in one car.
Yeah.
frankly, they're all better than not doing any of it. So even a shit one's good, really. It's a bit like, I can't use that analogy. So the I get anxiety if I'm going on a long drive and I've got to meet people and we're meeting at a certain point, I get massive anxiety about my own timing. I'm normally there 45 to 50 minutes earlier than I should be because I'm so worried about being late.
Yeah.
And then I'm worried for them being late. And then I'm worried for them about breaking down, about my own anxiety about breaking. So it's quite a stressful. I'm joyful. I'm happy. I'm positive. I'm not at work. I'm doing something, you know, good for myself, whatever. But I have massive anxiety about it. I do really like getting in the car and just saying, and I do this often on a Friday to the frustration of other people in the company, I'm just going to drive to Manchester today. And I'm going to show up in Manchester, I'm going to show up in Edinburgh. And I love that. I do love that. Yeah. 4:15 alarm, little coffee, chat to the dog, sun's coming up. Even though I'm going to get there at 7:45 and the shops don't open till 10, I've got a logic why that was a clever thing to do because I'm just up and gone. And I love that. I love the Radio 4 thing, Radio 5, Radio 4. It's where I think, it's where I have ideas. I've never really had a good idea in this bloody office, frankly. Certainly after 2 o'clock, I might as well go home. But in a car early, I'm really clever.
Yeah.
So
I love all of that. Yeah.
So I like all of it. I like it with people, without people, on my own, not on my own. Sometimes people in a car thing, I get more worried about that just because, oh my God, what am I going to talk about? Am I going to be entertaining enough? Am I going to look after people? I worry about other people too much sometimes. It sounds like I'm a nicer person than I actually am, but I do have anxiety for others. So it's quite a complicated subject, this.
It is.
I
love that bit about the anxiety of you've got a group. It's going to happen to me this weekend, actually. Going down for the members meeting at Goodwood. There'll be part of the weekend, we'll have a number of different people in the car. And I'm already anxious over, will they all know where to meet? Will they be there on time? Because Neil and I, we are so different in so many ways, but we are 100% aligned on time is late. Early is not quite early enough. Very early is on time.
Yeah. I've almost got stomach cramps of anxiety for others.
Yes, exactly.
It's weird. Know
exactly what you feel like when you say that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I can only laugh at that last bit. The good thing is that Neil Clifford, on this show, you can have it all. So there you go, have it all. Manish Pandey, solo or multi-partner?
Being driven solo. That's actually my favourite thing. Long journeys. Being driven by somebody who's paid to drive me, so I don't need to talk to them. Because I find, exactly like Neil, it's a fantastically productive time. And there's something about being driven in a car when you've got a longish journey. Long journey, I would define here as over 2 hours. So 2 hours plus is a long journey. One hour, it's a train, it's whatever. And being alone, especially in the back of that car, is fantastically productive. And I'm terrible at reading in the back of the car, having an iPad in the back of the car, so I can't do any of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get a little bit of motion sickness doing that. But if you're just sitting in the back of the car, being driven to a destination more than 2 hours away, I find it literally, it's almost zen-like how productive you can be. Going there with 10 problems, 3 in screenwriting, 2 in film production, 1 in casting, 5 in scheduling, and 1 legal. And you come out of that journey and they're all solved. So
nice.
Being driven in the back of a car.
Can I send you some of mine next time you're on a long journey?
Edward.
Solo.
Not Edward.
Yeah, that's all you need to know about EFL. One word.
I've even written here, I'm so, even when I've got others in the car, I'm still solo. I don't think I get anxiety, but I don't particularly like dwelling. And so if I know which service station I want to use, I know how much fuel I'm either going to have to conserve to get there. And I'm talking sort of cross Europe, etc. So I know I want to get to that specific service station because it's got the better coffee or the better sandwich. And I know where the toilet is. So I'm going to fill it up. And then when there's 5 people that get out the car and they want to, you know, go and look at some chocolates and take the dog for a wee and stuff like that, I get anxious once it's full and I've had my coffee and my sandwich and I just want to go. Actually, I eat the sandwich on the go as well. Clearly, you can't just sort of hover around eating it before you get in the car. But anxious is the wrong word. But I want to listen to what I want to listen to, and I don't particularly want to apologise for it. And I don't want to feel like, are we listening to this because I want to listen to it? Are they sat over there now annoyed that I'm listening to what I want to listen to?
Yeah.
We use words like solipsistic.
Easy, you say.
Solipsistic.
What is solipsistic, Manish?
Solipsistic. Love it.
What is solipsistic?
That is being so intensely into yourself, you don't know that the world exists outside you.
I might get a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Neil,
nice knowing you, Manish.
To make me a hat, please.
Jesus Christ. Give him a hug, Manish. I think I've inadvertently opened a whole can of worms with this.
Massive.
This is a window into personalities, isn't it? So I can embrace all of these. I'm also going to split the difference and be lily livid and say maybe the perfect journey is the one where you drive there on your own and back with your mates or with a mate. So you get both experiences.
Well, that's a good point. But if you were going there and back, would you want to go there with your mates and back alone, or vice versa?
Oh, good.
I'd probably do back the alone. I'd do the former. I'd go with people and come back.
Yeah. I'd probably crash the car when we're there.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I think there are arguments on all sides here. I now realise, as Neil Clifford was talking, there are good car buddies and bad car buddies, and they don't necessarily square with how close your real friendships are outside of the car. Mm. I know people who are really good car buddies who I find a bit irritating outside of the car, but inside the car, they get it. But I've got really good friends that, when they're in the car, are frankly fucking annoying, and I don't want them in the car. But outside of it, I love them. So Chris Cooper doesn't fit through those character categories, I can assure you. He hits both bases. But I think a car conversation that goes well in the right car, where there's a shared experience, where both of you leave the journey or get out of the car and think, wow, I really enjoyed that, is one of, without wanting to come across as being overly romantic, it's a really special moment. And when it happens, you remember it, and you have a totally different view of that place, that motor vehicle, and that person.
It's good with children. It's a good place to talk to kids. Yeah.
I totally agree with you. So all of us will talk about, oh, when I was a kid in the car, we didn't wear seatbelts. So I used to sit in that, but I used to sit in that bit in the Phantom 5 between the two front seats. I remember being wedged in the back of a 3 Series going up to Heathrow with 2 suitcases on my lap and one in the side there. I like to paint those as being great times. I was dragged out of bed at 3 in the morning and no one fucking spoke to me, but I still want to paint them as being positive times. Actually, they were hideous. They were probably abusive. So I think, but my working life, if I look back on what I did for a living, if you can call it that, 25 something years ago, more than that, actually the great privilege was the journeys. I just love them.
Mm.
I love the fact that some of the stories I have people to corroborate and other ones I don't. And I used to love getting lost in Europe. It was what I did professionally. There was no sat nav. I had a map book for each country that I bought from Germany because the German mapping was always best. So I used to buy map books of Europe in German service stations, and I'd head off with some money and I'd just get lost. I'd have nothing booked. And the sense of liberty.
Oh, it's lovely.
On a solo road trip. And if I don't have anxiety, as you guys have expressed it, it's the fact that you don't have to answer for your shitness to anyone. So you don't have to get to Eurotunnel and explain that you didn't book it. You don't have to say it's 11 at night, actually, you're right, there isn't a hotel booked. You can sleep in the car. You can, you know, your colon can do exactly what it wants. All these things are very liberating. But the flip side is that with people, and Neil's quite right, family, I love wandering around with my children. I love the nonsense conversations we have.
Yeah.
And I also love randomly picking on people in a lovely way. So, you know, if my daughter's asleep, I'll wake her up and I'll just start going at her for some reason about something really puerile until she just tells me to shut up. Also, another thing about a road trip that's really important if you're with the kids, the dog.
The
dog is the focal point, because my previous dog was big and had to stay in one place. But this dog, I know you're not supposed to do this, but this one likes, in the Land Cruiser, 3-row seats, he likes to roam around. And he chooses his person to sit with for a bit. And everyone spends 3 or 4 hours talking about what the dog's doing. He's just the focal point. What's he doing now? Look at that. That's weird. Do you think he's stupid? Do you think he's clever? So all this stuff, I absolutely love. So I
can't forgive the dog's colon in the car, though, that when you're trapped in there.
Well, this little number, he's not too bad. I mean, the things I've had before, Jesus Christ, they were awful. But now we've opened up the can of worms. There's so much going on, and there's so much you can learn about yourself and how you interact with the world from the solo, multi-person question. But I do think the shared experience of doing something great in a car can't be beaten. Just can't be beaten. I love it.
It's so good. Became a Hollywood star all by itself, didn't it?
Sorry, there were 2 people talking.
I was just saying it was so big, it became a Hollywood genre all by itself. I mean, the whole point of a buddy road movie is about 2 people who get in, they go for a journey, and they're both transformed.
Yeah.
Share a photo after this. Of what we drove from Monaco to San Sebastian, and we'd just got Saki the poodle, and he was so excited to be in the car with us. Pretty much for the 9-hour drive, he had two legs on the rear seats and two legs on the front armrest the whole time, looking out the window in excitement to get there.
Dogs. Mm. Amazing.
So this is, I've got to word this carefully because it could go on forever. What's the factoid to paraphrase the late great broadcaster that's you learned most recently that made you think, I never knew that, about the car world, something motoring? It can't just be about your own personality, sexuality. It's got to be about cars, all right? Let's keep it to there. Edward, you go first.
I can't drive flat out everywhere without getting in trouble.
What's that, Edward? What was the word I just used?
Best answer ever.
I actually took to Google to this because there wasn't anything that came to mind that I've learned. But here's a couple of couple for you here. No washing cars in Switzerland on a Sunday.
And Germany.
Yeah. No drinking, including water, when driving in Cyprus.
Really?
You can get a $5,000 fine or whatever the currency is in Moscow for driving around in a dirty car.
I'm all for that.
And this one's kind of a given.
Have you been to Moscow in the winter? Everything is brown.
This is what I learned. And this was an interesting one, which this kind of makes total sense. But I wonder, I'm going to go and see if this works. But you can't pay with your phone in a drive-through in the UK.
You can, but there's a really good guy who's a police officer who has an Instagram account.
He's Devon and Cornwall bloke.
Yeah, and he's trying to explain it. There is a legal grey area, isn't there, about whether you on a public highway. You're quite right, Edward. It's a good one, this. But I think it's a grey area.
Yeah.
Because if your engine's running at the door whilst you're picking up your burger and fries, your car should be stationary with the engine off, I believe.
Yeah. That is right. I mean, this is a good example from the conversation of the time, how bad law ends up looking stupid. And that is a good example of where that law, which is a bad law, I think, because it's just so messy and contradictory to all the touchscreen stuff that's going on. And they've had to make this silly little dancing on a pinhead loop around, oh, yes, but what about drive-throughs? Because the whole world has gone to, nobody has a wallet anymore. They have these things. Oh, shit, didn't think of that.
I don't understand the problem. It's not a public highway. You're off the public highway. It doesn't make any difference.
Well, the law, this is another conversation on time, but I saw the bloke because he does 3 or 4 videos a month about this stuff, explaining it. He's quite a good guy. And he said, if there's a chain across, then it's not open to the public. But if there's no chain across, the law sees it as, even though the land might be owned by a non-state player, the laws of the land for the highway apply. But I think that not drinking water in Cyprus, that is a bloody good factoid.
That's really, really good.
And just finally, because we're not doing this week in cars, but I'm in Portugal and I rented a Mercedes GLE from the airport. And sometimes when you get off a flight and you're renting a car in a different country, you're always a bit frazzled and you're thinking you're going to do something wrong. But I had all the electrical aids on in the GLE, and actually, they're brilliant. My little thumbs come up; it came down. I don't know why that. But they're brilliant. These when you're in a country in a rental car, having all these driver aids on, slowing your braking down, keeping you in the lane, etc. Highly recommended.
Yes,
Manish.
I'm going to resort to few little Indian regulations that I found, which I just thought are absolutely brilliant. Now, I'll revert to my earlier accent. Delhi High Court, in case related to traffic offences, had ordered to remove tinted glasses from all four-wheelers as there were apprehensions that antisocial elements might misuse it to hide their identities.
That's so a good accent you've got there.
Okay. How about this? Smoking inside a car is a violation of traffic law. If somebody is found guilty of smoking inside a car, he stroke she will have to pay a fine of just 500 rupees. This is not only dangerous for the smoker, but also for other people sitting in a car or outside.
That's true.
Number three, use of high beam headlights at night will attract just 500 rupees fine. But according to reports, this is the main cause of road accidents and is considered very dangerous. Whereas driving a vehicle at night without headlights will attract just a 5 to 15 rupee fine, which is a cruel joke. And the last one, I love this. Borrowing the car for a short while. This rule is applicable only in Chennai. As per this rule, if someone is using a borrowed vehicle, the owner should have a clear knowledge of the vehicle being borrowed. In case the police stops you and finds out that the owner had no clear knowledge of you borrowing their car, the offender can face 3 months in jail or a 500 rupee fine. The intent behind enforcing the said rule is to prevent cars from being stolen. Yeah. As thieves often escaped after citing the fact that they had just borrowed the car.
Very good. Oh, I love those. That's woken me up, that has. Neil Clifford, what factoid have you recently learned?
Well, mine is completely different to you guys, and I'm rereading the question to see whether I've sort of fucked this up, but I don't think
I know you haven't. No, it's very broad.
Yeah, it's very broad. I didn't know, I've talked about this car before, that there was a road-going Porsche 917. the Count Rossi car, which, as I've spoken about, is my favourite car of all time. But I didn't really know that car existed to about 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, bringing myself up on things like this, I felt a bit embarrassed that I didn't know
about it. It never appeared in any of those things.
No, it was never written about. It was never in car magazine. It was never anywhere. And the internet didn't exist in the 70s. So I was a little bit embarrassed and shocked that I didn't know about this car. And I had the fortunate luck, really, to spend time with that car, not in Retromobile, but recently in London, parked on the street. And you've probably seen a lot of that now on Instagram, organised by the wonderful Joe Macari. And that car on the street in Old Bond Street is probably, quite possibly, one of my peak seeing a car in real life experiences ever, because this thing is beyond gorgeous. There's, you know, that lovely 70s silver, the beautiful perfect tan, and I didn't know that car existed, and I was slightly embarrassed. I've never admitted it before that I was embarrassed I didn't know about it, but I've admitted it now.
Well, there you go, Neil Clifford.
Yeah.
So Chris Cooper.
Coventry Climax. Sounds like an unlikely set of circumstances, doesn't it?
He thought about that and it was good.
Yeah. I'll go home now. I didn't know that I won't say precisely where, but it's quite close to Neil and me, tucked away just behind a little high street near us, is a business that I've sort of known about for a long time, but I didn't know precisely where it was and how close. It's literally, I could see it. If I stand on top of the office, I can see it from here. It's a business called Classic Autos. Classic Autos is a family-owned business owned by the Findberg family. So there's a 917 link here as well.
That's why you took it off the wall. That's where it is.
The Findberg family owns one of those cars.
Yep.
Have a guess which one it is.
Not the tubular one built in Dartford.
No, sadly, because that means I'd have the other one. Yeah. Mark Finberg, stood around. He's in mid-80s. He was a solicitor. And in fact, that car's been everywhere. It's always a good one.
Yeah.
Festival of Speed or other stuff. He's still got his business card. It's a 1980s embossed, beautiful old-fashioned business card, which is still stuck.
It is.
Sellotaped. Probably is sellotaped or a little glued in the top of the glass of the driver's gull wing door. Classic Autos is owned by the Finberg family. And Nick Finberg, who is Mark's nephew, Mark's dad is Aubrey. They run this extraordinary business. So the boys bumped into Nick at a Goodwood test day when they were running the Mini a few weeks ago. And Nick came up to him and said hello, because they were running the Mini there without me. And said, come and see us. And we didn't realize how close they were. So we spent Friday afternoon there. It was the most wonderful afternoon. They specialize in C-types and D-types, rebuilding them, restoring them, racing them. Quite big into E-types. They've got, there's an English wheel. Does anyone know what an English wheel is?
Yeah.
Oh, is that the to bend the metal?
Basically, yeah, it's pound. Yeah. So we had a really, so I met their, one of their apprentices, Joe Frankham. Joe Frankham won the Apprentice of the Year award in last year's Octane Classic Motoring Awards, that big shindig. Neil, you've probably been to it a few times. Beautiful, wonderful business. Lots of lovely people there. Tom, we met as well, showed us around. So my sort of factoid or thing I didn't know that literally within walking distance from here, there is the most glorious little business, Classic Autos, owned by the Finberg family, run by Nick. By the end of the afternoon, as you could probably tell where this is going, I was thinking, well, look at all these lovely cars. And he said, well, you know, we've got this Mini and we're running, and well, we couldn't run anything, we could run an E-type. So I'm sort of, we had the family conference. And I suspect this weekend, looking at all the lovely, pre-63 or semi-lightweight, don't know. But so watch this space. But yeah, so I had no idea, so close to us. Now I know it's that close. When Lynn listens to this, she'll just have her head in her hands.
Yeah.
So
anyone that has a wife that listens to this is in a good place anyway, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Well, I love the fact this is roamed all over the place. I'm not going to be able to match you on factoids, but the one that made me go, I never thought about that in the most embarrassing way. And let's face it, some of these are ones where you have to style it out.
Yeah.
When you're presented with the facts and you realize that everyone else in the room knew that and you thought, I didn't know that and I should really have known that, reminds me of the fact that I'm trying to set up a celebration of 25 years of GT3 at the moment with a certain car company. It's 25 years since the GT3 was launched, the Porsche. And I drove the first one back to the UK. And I remember collecting it from Werk 1 in Zuffenhausen. And I got in the car. I mean, talk about a trip on your own. Drove it all the way back. And someone paid me to do 185 miles an hour on the Autobahn to bring it back to the autocar. I think that was in July 99.
What colour?
It was Guards Red.
Oh.
Pre-digital cameras. All I've got is a load of those Fuji ones that were green, the cardboard ones. I took two of those and I've got the photo somewhere. It's one of the best things I've ever done. I was just driving around going, is this really me? And I drove to a garage called Dick Lovett Swindon, and I bought my first 911 in it because I was just, I just decided this was my life. And I had saved up. Don't worry, I didn't have the spur of the money and resources to do that. Anyhow, during the road test shoot, I wasn't as good at sliding cars then as I am now. And I wrecked one of the rear tires and delaminated. And I had to get the car back to Germany 4 days later, and I only had three tyres on the car. So I phoned up Mitchell Diva, as they still are then. It was just called Mitchell, now it's Pro Tyre. But yes. Mitchell Diva were and are the best. For some reason, somewhere near Amesbury, Wiltshire is the best selection of rubber in the UK. If you need it, it's there.
Yeah.
So I phoned them up and said, have you got a tyre? They went, no, because that tyre isn't on the system yet. We know it's coming. Why would you need one? I didn't want to explain that. Because then we're phoning up Porsche GB and saying, there's a GT3 in the country you don't know about and it's missing a tyre. So I then said, well, have you got a similar size? Well, have you got that size? I need to get it back to Germany. And they said, yeah, we've got that size, but it's not N-rated. I said, doesn't matter about the N-rating for this. N-rating, for those that don't know, is a Porsche-specific tyre. If you've got a Pirelli or a Michelin or a Dunlop, whatever it is, if Porsche have homologated that tyre, it'll have an N on the side of it. There's another factoid that you might not know. Most people know about it now. And that means that that tyre's been developed especially for that car.
Mm.
Anyhow, long story short, he then goes, but I've got one, but it's the wrong load rating. And I went, yeah. And I didn't know that the last, if you look at your tyre, it'll say something like 58Y. There'll be two numbers and a letter at the end of your tyre. Yeah. And that's the load rating. That's the weight of the car. So you can have the same tyre, but it can be for vehicles of vastly different weight. And if you put one with the wrong load rating on it, you've got a sidewall that's much, much stiffer, and it will totally bollocks the ride of your car up. And I can tell you that a GT3 that's got one load rating on one side of the rear and another on the other side is a right bastard to drive at 180 going through Germany.
Stagger.
Because it's like a drunk Scotsman. You're like, it's on the piss the whole time. So I can remember when they were explaining load ratings going, yeah. I did not have a freaking clue.
I didn't.
But now I do.
Did you fess up when you delivered the car back?
I got a snottogram from the Germans saying that there was I remember the wording, there was unconventional rear tyres on the car. But I also shamefully remember, and I found the photo the other day. I've got it on my phone quickly, if I can bring it up quickly. I in those days, if a car came on SGO plates, you know, those German plates, you would, yes, rather than leave them on because they were cool, we would take them off to make the car look like it was a UK car and put on a British plate. And in those days, you could just walk into Halfords without a V5, they'd make any plate.
Yeah.
What you need to know is that for the road test of that vehicle, you can't quite see it. The last three letters of the number plate are CJH, which has nothing to do with Christopher James Harris.
Yeah.
I put my own initials.
That's brilliant. On the number plate. Can you send us that?
I was about 8 months into working at Autocar, and I was putting my own name on number plates for the photo shots. Absolute tit. Right, moving on.
That's pretty good.
Let's do our two car garage. I'm gonna have to, but Edward, tell a story while I find this.
Chris, wait, hold on a second. You just go into your WhatsApp, you've got it there.
What I could say to fill the void is, Monkey, if you do need some number plates made up, we've got a bloke locally here, we'll do it. You know,
okay, yeah, here we go. You're the son of Doris, who is now getting on a bit. This is familiar to my life. But in her prime, was a Group B rally champion. I'm not sure Michelle would like being called Doris, but she needs your help sourcing two vehicles. She has since retired from rally fame to the quaint town of Boughton-on-the-Water.
Love Boughton-on-the-Water.
She needs a car that won't look out of place in the car park of St. Lawrence's Church or ruffle the feathers of her fellow churchgoers. However, it needs to pack a punch, and she doesn't like to dilly-dally. Whoever wrote this is just spot on. For her second car, she'd like to relive her youth and have a rally legend to make full use of the B roads out in the Cotswolds. She has a budget of 80K. So you've got to have a rally legend and a... This is Davido Presto 94. Fantastic. So you've got 80 grand. This is a tough ask. Neil Clifford.
No, it's easy, this one.
It's easy, yeah.
But Boughton on the Water, it's got to be a Volvo. But she wants the most unassuming, fast Volvo. It isn't. I'm not going 850 TR5 thing. I'm going the more understated. Another car I didn't really know existed, actually, for a while ago. The V70R, automatic one. I think they were only in automatic, actually.
There was a manual older one. And then
there was a manual older one, but I'm told the Series 2 is the one to have.
Which is auto.
They're about 10 grand for a really, really, really good one. And no one, almost me, doesn't know what this car is, but it's got 200 odd horsepower, cool little thing. And so that I'd get that. And then what do you get? It's really hard, the rally one. I'm going Subaru because I didn't like the Mitsubishi. I never got on with that. I can't afford a T16. I can't go Group B completely. I can't get an Audi Quattro Sport. I can't get an RS200. You don't want a 6R4 because they're shit. So you're going to go 15 grand, you used to be able to get a P1, you know, 2013, 14, couldn't you? A P1 Subaru, even it was 7995, weren't they, in top mark? But now they're like 30 grand. But I'm saving loads of money. She's got 40 grand to go on a cruise to, you know, around the world, actually. So I'm saving her 40 grand. She's got a P1 Subaru and a V70R Volvo.
Beat that, Ed would love it. You're going to struggle.
Well, Volvo's a good call. They're the only two-wheel drive, though. They're front-wheel drive, aren't they, those Volvos?
That's front-wheel drive.
It doesn't matter. She just wants speed for the first car.
It gets cold up there, and you know it's difficult. She might get stuck on the drive trying to get to church. Yeah. So Subaru Forester STI, I think, is going to be her church car.
Yeah,
that's also boxy but good in the Volvo expression. And then I was struggling with the Group B car for the moment, and I remember back to one of the very first cars that we sold on Collecting Cars, which was an Opel Manta Group B homologation special. And I'll quickly find a photo of it now. But I could see
that was on my list. If you can buy a Manta 400 with what you've got left over there, I need to know where that car is. I'll buy it tomorrow.
Well, I'm going to get you a photo of it now, Christopher, just to pacify you.
That's a cool car.
Anyway, you carry on. I'll find a photo for it.
Okay,
anyway,
I think
Doris is going to be very happy in that.
Is it an Ascona?
Here we go.
How much was that?
57 grand.
No.
Yeah.
57 and a half grand.
There you go. Yeah. Okay, what a car. Manta 400. Okay, I hate to say it, Neil. He's beating you there.
Yeah, I'd agree with you.
Chris Cooper.
Well, I might have won this. So I think in Boughton on the Water, nothing says don't scare the neighbours more or better than a little Mercedes A-Class, clear glass, no writing on anywhere over it. You know, but you could have, and I have to say, I went to the resources of Collecting Cars for this. List for free, sell for free, hassle free.
Yes.
And I found this. And I found that.
You've got some
A 35.
Oh, there you go. Yep.
A 35.
Yep.
Clear glass, 22,750. I still look at that and think that's just a lot of car. And I thought, well, so that would keep her going around Boughton on the Water. And she'd have a lovely sesh in Boughton on the Water, pottering backwards and forwards with that. But I was in the same lines as Edward here. Group B. So this is also sold on Collecting Cars.
Oh,
look at that little Renault 5.
Yeah, it's good, though.
Renault 5. It's a road car converted into... It's been converted by the right people. John Price rallying. Done by the right people. It's a road car converted into rally car, 50 grand. So Daily Doris in her A-Class would be very, very happy and all her neighbours would be happy. But not dilly-dallying around Doris in her Renault 5 Turbo converted into proper rally car. I think she'd be
cool.
I think she'd be well sorted.
Good. Well, at least you've looked after her dilly-dally. Manish, what would you be choosing?
I've actually done a film with Michelle Mouton and I've seen her drive and none of that fire is out. But what I did notice and what I did talk to her about, because she was the women's ambassador for the FIA, was whether she loved chucking cars around as much now as she did back in the day. And she went, no, like that. And I just wonder whether with Doris, what this is about is kind of being young again, but without completely reliving her youth. So go with me on this. And I think what this is about is it's the appearance of being a rally driver whilst being exactly her age. And I think Michelle Mouton, what year was she born? I think, is it 58? 1958? Something like that. Might even be a bit earlier than that.
I'll look it up.
No, wait, I must have that wrong by 10 years because of course she was flying in the kind of early 80s. Anyway, the point is, I think that the pokey car, to get it in navy blue with a black roof, would be Mini John Cooper Works
a three-door. Because that thing goes to 0-60 as fast as a 4.56, as far as I could see. I mean, they're amazingly pokey cars. And I think you take a Mini to church,
yeah,
no one spots you. And then there was something that we did get Michelle to drive. It's derived from the Group B. It is the road version of it. But I saw her drive this car like she was driving in a rally. And it was just a 1985 Audi Quattro, which I think you can pick up for £50,000. It's not a Group B car. I know it's the kind of, you know, civilized cousin of a Group B car, but how you drive them. And we had to pay £500 for the oversteer she had at a certain stately home, taking out about 5 yards of turf, because it's who's in the car. What's you? And their attitude and not the car.
These are all really good. Everyone's on it this week. So, although I think there's still room for improvement. So, I'm going to say that these, we're talking about a sleeper. We're talking about, we want a Q car. We want the ultimate Q car for the ultimate Q woman. Because let's face it, she's doing the flowers in the church, does a lot of local community work. She works in a local shop. No one knows that she used to take on Val Thorell on the stage of the Populist Rally. She is Q herself. She's a sleeper.
Mm.
So what she wants is a C7 Audi S6 Avant, a car that was bought in minute numbers. So everyone talks about the RS6, but there was an S6. It has the narrow body of the normal car, but it has over 400 horsepower, still got a twin-turbo V8 in it. And you cannot spot these bloody things. When you get smoked by one, you cannot, even if you know, you can't spot them. So...
yeah,
but it's been to MTM again, like last week's RS6, and it's got about 550. It's covered in scratches, and it's got two things that are the most ultimate Q accessories. First of all, it has the National Trust membership sticker in the front window. That is always Q, because that makes you think that's a real ditherer. And on the back, there's been some extra black plastic attached to the rear bumper lower down, so that when her spaniel gets in the boot, it doesn't scuff it. Both of those things are incredibly Q. I'm just blowing my nose. Hey, Phoebe, it's good to know. The rally car, I'm sort of with Neil. I love the sound of Subarus, but she wants to have a good laugh, and she enjoys her driving. She understands the dynamics. She knows these Subarus just understeer, and the gear changes is a little bit annoying on them. So she's got an Evo 6. GSR, one of the UK cars bought in by John Kirkham back in the day, and she loves it to bits. And she doesn't drive it that fast. It's got a standard exhaust, don't want any more noise.
Yeah.
But, and this is where we leave it open, her grandchildren have got their eyes on it because they know it's worth a few bob. So they're trying to prize it out of grandma's hands at the moment. So for me, C7, S6, and an Evo 6 GSR.
Nice.
Are you driving your Subarus correctly, Chris? Because I'm guessing Neil doesn't have the same issues with understeering.
No, I've never had this understeery thing.
No, but then Neil has a subtler driving style than mine, and I think I need to learn something here. Let's move on to this week. We're going to give some more favourite YouTube videos because people quite like those. So
I need to go and get a flight.
Go on, Edward, you go first.
Very simple, rough, yellow bird, Nürburgring.
Nice.
Yeah, can't argue with that. One of the best. One of the very best. We will put links up this week to these videos, okay, so you can see them. But
I'm gonna go and get a flight. See you all later.
Bye-bye, Edward. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you weekend.
Bye-bye.
The Stefan Rosa, White Sox, Nürburgring, unbeatable. Can't really complain. Can't argue with that. So, Manish Pandey.
I would urge you to go and find Clive James in Las Vegas. It was done in 1981. It was part of the kind of Clive James traveling series. Mm. You will laugh, you will cry, you will learn something, but he shoots the whole thing over the weekend that Bernie puts the very first Las Vegas Grand Prix together. And it is some of the stuff you'll see. You'll see PK racing against Andretti on this ridiculous circuit in a Datsun with Clive James in the back, just about not throwing up. You'll see croupiers telling you how to beat the house, and you'll see Bernie explaining how he created the Grand Prix. You'll see the press fighting, the local police. I mean, it literally is 58 minutes of hilarious time caps.
58 minutes, right, that's going to alter my choice. Neil Clifford.
Mine's 2 minutes. Vic Alford, Targa Florio, 1972. Ooh. Put that into YouTube. I don't like circuits that are connected, as in they go round and round and round. I love road circuits. I adore Sicily. It's my favourite place in the world, probably, outside of being at home. And he keeps saying, the key to the Targa Florio is just go as fast as possible for as long as possible. That's it, isn't it? That's how you win races.
Good advice.
Yeah, it's really good. Enjoy that. 2 minutes of 70s YouTube.
Chris Cooper.
Raymond Baxter.
Oh.
There are two quite short videos. We'll put the links up. If you look for Raymond Baxter OBE, you'll find a set of interviews done with his family and friends just after he died. And extraordinary man. He was a fighter pilot, Spitfire pilot in the war, BBC technical aircraft, voice of Farnborough Air Show, amazing. Voice of motor racing. There's a bit later in the video.
Tomorrow's World,
where we most of us know him from. There's a bit later in the video where Michael Rodd, who we all know as well, was talking about there were North York moors and very, very icy winter. And Michael said, Raymond, are you sure you're okay with this? And Raymond turned to him with that voice and said, dear boy, I won my class in the Monte. Raced in the Monte Carlo Rally 12 times. There's a bit in it, he owned one of the little ships. And there's a voiceover with him piloting this little ship thing somewhere on the South Coast. And I think these are words that made me think positively about our country and its future. In that voice, he said, we're British. We know what we're doing. We believe in what we're doing. And I thought, I wish he was around today to say that. Yeah. The other one, the short clip, which I think is on Instagram, but we'll show the links, is his commentary of the first flight of Concorde.
Yeah, I've seen that.
The hairs standing up on my neck thinking about his voice.
Yeah.
And his immortal words, when it finally took off, he said, she flies.
Yeah.
Raymond Baxter.
Oh, yeah, okay. Lump in throat, we'll go and watch that. I've fascinated hugely on this. It makes me realize how much time I've spent probably on YouTube over the years, and how much, despite the fact I have my issues with YouTube in its present format as someone who tries to broadcast on there and numbers go up and down randomly, we didn't have a resource like YouTube when we were younger. And the idea that, you know, you could maybe go to an encyclopedia or you can meet someone that could tell you about a story, or you could maybe find a VHS cassette that someone could lend you.
Mm.
Now kids can just go Saturn 5, done, and just watch it. I think the internet is an evil thing, but it's also an amazing thing. I'm going to go for... I've got go-tos. I'm a creature of habit. The way my brain works, I do the same thing over and over again. And I might pour myself whiskey after I've seen my kids, and I'll probably watch an onboard of Patrick Depailler in the wet at Montreal. I still think it's one of the best things ever filmed. I just love the driving. I love the fact that you can't quite tell if it's a circuit or a lake because it's so modern. And if you've ever driven a car with a DFE in it and that little steering angle, the way he drives the car is utterly mesmerizing. But then it'll open the wormhole of other... They did a series of onboards that year. And if you go, you'll see some of the footage. It's just mental. But I think Depailler Montreal is just sensational. Go and watch it. It's mega.
Wonderful.
Great choice.
Right, guys. So I think that wraps up episode 60. So that's one anniversary gone. We look forward to other anniversaries in the future. Thank you to my fellow podcasting addicts, and we'll hopefully broadcast to you next week.